It is time for the Media Beat from David Tereshchuk, his weekly review of media coverage for Robinhood Radio and exclusive to Robinhood Radio. David is a multimedia and international journalist with his own online column at themediabeat.us. And as a special correspondent since 2012, he has contributed TV reports to the PBS network, mostly on ethical issues. Here's David.
This is David Tereshchuk with the Media Beat for the weekend beginning December 1st, 2023. And once again, I'm in Ireland. I frequently emphasize the value for a journalist to observe world events from the standpoint of other places besides his or her more regular base, in my case, the media capital of the world, New York City. But this past week sees me taken somewhat by surprise at how distinct the view from Ireland has become right now on major global news. Little did I expect Israel's war in Gaza to cause such a deep ruckus in Dublin. Ruckus was the word used when I spoke with a longtime practitioner of Irish diplomacy. A word or two as background. First, Ireland is noted in diplomatic circles, you might even say renowned, for managing to stay on good terms with just about everyone else around the globe. And with a narrower focus, I should mention something I was rather movingly reminded of during the broadcast observance last month of Remembrance Day here, Veterans Day in the US. 35,000 Irishmen went to their deaths in World War I in order to, quote the author of the broadcast elegy I heard, in order to uphold the security of small nations. In 1914, that meant especially the small nation of Belgium, as it fell prey to the much bigger and more heavily armed German Empire. A century later, those two small countries of Israel and Ireland have suddenly found themselves at severe loggerheads. I've talked before about Irish media coverage of Israel's angry reactions to an accusation by Ireland's president. In strikingly undiplomatic terms, President Michael Higgins said Israel was, quote, creating a huge humanitarian crisis with its Gaza bombardment and ground war. A substantial diplomatic spat ensued. Then, with this past week's long-wished-for pause in the fighting, or the truce, as reporters have been calling it, for prisoner exchanges and humanitarian aid deliveries, and then even an extension of that pause, the Israeli-Irish enmity did not cool down. In fact, it got decidedly worse. On the second day of the pause, among the hostages released by Hamas was the 9-year-old Irish-Israeli girl Emily Hand, an occasion for some rejoicing, you would think, and it was. But the Irish Prime Minister, in the Irish language the Taoiseach, Mr. Leo Varadkar, caused Israeli fury to boil again when he said in an online statement, "An innocent child who was lost has now been found and returned." Israeli officials were fast to point out that that was a distressingly neutral, even overly gentle way of phrasing it. Government spokesperson Alon Levy spoke scornfully. "This is how you describe a little girl who went missing during a stroll in a forest, then gets discovered by a friendly hiker, not a girl brutally abducted by death squads that massacred her neighbors." The Israeli Foreign Minister Eli Cohen soon added his voice of condemnation, addressing Varadkar directly via the X platform, formerly known as Twitter. "You have lost your moral compass," he said, "and are trying to legitimize and normalize terror. Shame on you." Now, Varadkar was in fact making an allusion borrowed from the Bible, perhaps unfortunately from a parable in the New Testament, which of course is hardly a standard reference source in the Jewish state's government offices. The phrasing, "was lost, but now is found," is familiar from its frequent use in Christian hymns and in sermons. Perhaps it was altogether too arcane, even subtle, and perhaps, sad to say, not angry enough for the arena of testy international relations during a bitter war. And certainly not quite right for the overheated venue of social media, to which leaders can turn these days more readily and intemperately. than to their traditional measured missives dispatched through diplomatic channels. For what it's worth, I should maybe say Leo Varadkar was, perhaps interestingly, born to a Hindu father and has described himself as being raised in Catholic surroundings, but is now, and I quote the man himself, non-religious, though he does find religion to be what he calls fascinating. It's perhaps also worth pointing out from a media observer's standpoint that Elon Musk, yes, Elon Musk, chose to enter the kerfuffle over Varadkar and condemn him. Is there any kerfuffle Musk would not want to enter? He sidelighted Varadkar's desire for more effective public order measures, about which I'll speak in a moment, and said, ironically, the Irish Prime Minister hates the Irish people. I cannot quite follow that logic, but then I long ago gave up expecting logic in Musk's pronouncements. About public order, another expected news event burst into the headlines of this normally quiet capital city. A horrific stabbing attack in the city center against three kindergarten-aged children and one of their adult carers. The suspect is a man in his 50s who's been a naturalized Irish citizen for nearly a decade, has a history of mental illness, and has been living in a homeless shelter. The attack swiftly became fodder for anti-immigrant extremists who took to social media, stirring up fellow right-wingers to take to the streets, along with, I dare say, many troublemakers of no clear ideology, except perhaps simple hatred. There were claims immediately circulated that the attacker was an illegal immigrant, a deranged non-national was the phrase used, a sharply crude example, I'd say, of social media being put to one of its worst uses, where, we have to wonder, were the so-called moderating systems and precautions against hate speech that big tech executives always boast about whenever they face demands for accountability. Within hours of the stabbings, there were street riots the like of which Dublin has not seen for 50 years or more. A city bus, a tram, and police vehicles were all left as burned-out shells. Stores were looted, and many arrests made, and police officers injured. It was all a reminder that Ireland, for all its peaceable atmosphere nowadays, is not immune to the kind of furious violence that we're more likely to associate with other countries. The wave of anti-immigrant bigotry on the continent and in the UK, and for that matter its equivalent in the US, has its echoes here without doubt, but until now it has not exploded into such violence. One pleasing irony of that ugly day is that there was a hero. The apparently crazed suspect with the knife was forcibly subdued by a delivery man, armed with only his motorbike crash helmet. A handy weapon, it turned out to be. And he turned out to be a recent immigrant named Chao Benicio from Brazil. His heroism was rewarded by a massive inflow of money to a GoFundMe campaign created online by his almost instant fan base, cash which mounted within a few days to several hundred thousand dollars. Benicio has promised to share this unexpected windfall with the 5-year-old girl whose stabbing injuries have kept her in a Dublin hospital's intensive care unit. For Ireland generally, self-examination is something of a national pastime. That's probably true for many other states in that class of countries Ireland is proud to belong to, the class of small nations I mentioned earlier. One metric to which Ireland is acutely attentive is, perhaps unsurprisingly, population flow. In the wake of the great hunger of the mid-19th century, emigration, especially to the United States, became an endemic feature of Irish life. Much has changed since then, dramatically so since Ireland entered the European Union in the 1970s, the same time as the UK did, only to make its ungainly exit very recently, but that's another story. The massive change in Ireland's fortunes has meant the one-time net exporter of people is nowadays a net importer. This week saw more confirmation of this with a report from the country's Economic and Social Research Institute. Since COVID's restrictions on travel are now well and truly behind us, Ireland has seen a substantial uptick in both inward and outward migration. By offsetting inward against outward, we see a net increase in the migrant population of 50% over the course of one calendar year. The percentage may be high, but the actual migration total is still not exactly massive. This remains, after all, a small nation. And it now stands at a little over 77,000 incoming individuals. But over time, the immigrant population is substantially growing. The fact that community relations have stayed as generally peaceable as they have is strong testimony to Ireland's history and identity being formed to a remarkable extent by migration. In spite of frenetic efforts by the country's very small far-right minority, and their recent evening of chaos in the streets, some words still apply very pertinently from the noted commentator Fintan O'Toole, who is as prolific in his native country's media as he has been in both the New York and London's Review of Books. O'Toole affirmed in a November essay that, and I quote, "The Irish have had a very long training in understanding migrants as human beings in search of a better life. We are those humans." That's all from the Media Beat this week in Ireland. If you have been, thanks for listening.
Thank you very much, David. We will talk to you next week. David can be found at themediabeat.us.